The title tonight is, Can You Be Sure of Heaven Before You Die? But this will be a little bit different. We're going to talk about clarity. You know, if you don't have a clear message, do you really have a message if people don't understand? I remember in Bible college, the president of the college, Dr. Stanford, used to say this. He said, it takes more of a scholar to preach a sermon that everybody understands than a sermon that sounds scholarly that no one gets. One time in this pulpit when we had the ISCA National Convention here, we had a man preach. I still don't know what he said. Dr. Floyd didn't know what he said. No one in the place knew what he said. I don't think he knew what he said. And it was awful. I'm just going, what in the world? That's not what we're supposed to do. It takes a lot more effort to preach a sermon that people understand. It takes a lot more effort to preach a sermon that's clear. Now look at 1 Corinthians 14:8-9. It's kind of interesting that that's 1 Corinthians 8:9, because we always use Ephesians 2:8-9. For if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself for battle? So likewise, ye, except you utter words by the tongue, words easy to understand, how else shall it be known what is spoken, for you speak into the air? You know, we have an orchestra, and we hear our trumpets, and we know what they're doing. If I were to play the trumpet, it would be an uncertain sound, wouldn't it? You'd say, what was that? Well, that's what we're not supposed to do when we're preaching. Can a person be saved by faith without works at all? Think about that statement. Is that possible? How often the question arises? Let's be blunt. Not only is it true that a person can be saved by faith without works, the only way they can be saved is faith without works. If you add one little work, you're not going to be saved. Well, that's pretty scary. Is that true? Oh, yeah. Words are important, aren't they? See, the Christian life's not a sprint, but it's a marathon. It's a marathon. Now, Pastor Matt and his wife Jen have both run a real marathon, just like people in this church have done. A real marathon. And then his two little girls said, we ran a marathon too. I'm thinking, if you guys ran a marathon, I quit. What they meant was they ran as many miles as a marathon, but they did it over a lot of days. Well, still, that's a great thing for a small kid to do, isn't it? Run a marathon. And that's what they did. Well, anyway, Ephesians 2:8-9, for by grace are you saved through faith, not of yourselves, it's a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. That's what it says. And can we go to heaven without works? Well, of course, that's the only way you can go to heaven. Why? Because Christ will not share his dying on the cross with any of us. You don't do part, he does part. You don't do 1%, he does 99%. He does 100%, we do none. Period. We don't do any. And that's what it means. That's what it should mean. And that's what it has to mean. Let me give you a little quick illustration about grace. In the 1800s, an English evangelist, Henry Morehouse, he made his first trip to a small country, and he got into the country, and it was very poor. Won't say the name. And he got into the country, it was so poor, and he sees a little boy that's so dirty, and he's carrying a little pitcher of milk, and he's taking it to his family. It's probably the only money they have. They don't have any more money. And he tripped and broke the pitcher. The milk went everywhere. The pitcher went everywhere. And he was crying. This 1800. He says, my mommy's going to spank me. My mommy's going to spank me. And the evangelist Morehouse went over and said, honey, that's okay. She won't spank you. And he went and bought a pitcher and filled it with milk and helped him go to his mommy. He said, "Are you going to get spanked?" He said, "No, sir." He said, "This pitcher is a much better pitcher than what I broke." See, that's the grace of God, isn't it? See, God gives you way more than you deserve when he saves us. Way more. He gives you a better pitcher than you started with. Titus 3:5. "Not of works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy, he saved us." Man, don't you like that? Wow. "Through the washing of regeneration, the new birth, and the renewing of the Holy Spirit." Wow. You see it? I hope you see it, because 2 Timothy 1:9, "He called us with a holy calling, not according to our works." Romans 4:5, "But to him who does not work but believes on him to justify the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness." Wow. Wow. My grandson came and said, "You know, I don't know who had the idea of the high school kids are doing the Wednesday night thing for the kids, and each of them will speak at a different Wednesday night." And he said, "Could you help me kind of get ready for my message?" And he had a verse. I won't share his verse. I'll keep that for him. But I ran it through my, you know, I have thousands of books on my computer. And this one verse, I came up with 88 pages. From one verse. And I could have come up with 300 pages. And I said, "What you do, I want you to highlight it and then change it to your own words." And I explained all the pitfalls of commentaries. I said, "Some of these are Arminians. That means they believe you can lose it. The others are Calvin. Calvinists believe that you're born to go to heaven or go to hell without a choice." Sunday morning at Ravenswood, we had two babies in the service. I said, "The baby over here on the left, you know, they couldn't get excited or upset or anything because they didn't know what I was saying. This one, before the foundations of the world, was predestined by God to go to hell without a choice." I said, "The one over here on my right was predestined to go to heaven." Now listen, this isn't true what I'm telling you. Some of you are looking horrified. Okay? Every baby can go to heaven. Everybody born can go to heaven. But this is what they teach. So relax. Whew. I was speaking at a public high school once. And I was doing the joke saying there's no women in heaven. Because in Revelation, 8:1? It says there was silence in heaven. You know, it's just a joke. I said, "There'll be no women in heaven." And this girl goes, "Oh, no!" Man, I had to clarify that one quick. It's a joke. So I was telling about the two babies. Well, no one thinks God would make a baby that would be born to go to hell without a choice, or another baby born to go to heaven without a choice. But, you know, as you get older, well, there's some neighbors. I can understand them being born without a choice. They're pretty rotten. Right? I went in to see a condominium today, not for me, but to see someone. And as I walked in, I've never seen so many people that you just hear you knock on a door and they come running. I've never seen so many. And three of them recognized me from TV. And I was thinking, man, this is great. I appreciate it, but I wouldn't want to live here. When we came out, they heard the door and they came running again. I'm going, whoa. Whew. But we had to do a visit and well, that was interesting. I don't want to do that again. They were nice people. But I don't like when I open my door, people come running to you. Any of you like that? Whew, man, I don't think so. I don't think so. Y'all remember Shannon Faulkner a few years ago? And she went to court so she could become the first female to ever go to the Citadel. All-male military academy. She fought it in court. She finally won the right to enroll. But she only stayed a few days and couldn't endure it. And she quit and left. We haven't heard from her since. You ever hear of people that don't quit? They keep going. Now, others have done it and done well. But she couldn't do it after all that long court case. And we haven't heard from her since. But, you know, all of us aren't athletes. All of us can't run a marathon. We can't. Couldn't if you try. Some people are just born to run. Pastor Paul Julian, he's born to run. To him, you know, I used to jog. I know some of you won't believe that, but I used to jog every day. And I hated it every second. I never liked it. I like riding a bike, but I don't like jogging. He would jog alongside me many times when I'm on a bike. And I'm thinking, how can you do this? He's born to run. Some are born to run. Others are born to be couch potatoes. No. No one is. Well, these are all things that we need to think about. You know, if you think about the different things and you think about the book of James, and I don't have these verses for you, but it says faith without works is dead being alone. What does it profit? If someone says he has faith, by the way, this is chapter 2. Okay, and I want you to, if you got your Bible, look at verse 14 through 16. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked, destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. You get that? Okay, now everybody, I want you to get this. A person comes up to you and says, I'm not talking about the people that look totally healthy that say, I will work for food. They will not work for food. I promise you they will not work for food. You know, when someone comes to the church, we say, come down and we will give you all the food you need. You know how many have ever gone down to get it? Two. Most of them get mad. Their face gets flush. They said, I want money. I said, we don't give money. Now, if we know people, then we know they're good people, and we know they're not just making an issue of this. But let's say someone comes, and we know them, and we know they're really in need. This isn't someone that's out pandering and trying to rip people off. This is someone that really, really, really needs help. Okay? They come and they say, Pastor, I really need help. And I say, be you warmed and filled. Don't give them anything. See, this isn't talking about salvation in James. What's it talking about? It's talking about helping people. You see, it says, what does it profit, my brethren? Everybody in James is already saved. It says it, right? You know, God bless Martin Luther, and I believe in my heart he was a saved man, even though Angel doesn't. I believe he was a saved man, and I believe he's a good man. I believe without him we might not be here today. But Martin Luther was so upset with the book of James, he said it wasn't in the original canon. The canon's a measuring rod that they chose what was in the Bible, not. Believe me, James is in the canon. He just didn't understand it. Now, how could you understand more? Well, if I was raised a Catholic priest, I doubt if I'd understand everything either. He just didn't get it. It's talking about those that are already saved. What does it profit? What does it profit? You see? I hope you can see it. There's a motto in the office of a preacher, and he said, you can get anything done if you don't care who gets the credit. Isn't that a good statement? Another thing, when I go in preachers' houses or their offices, I love to see what they have. A Dr. Boudron in Trinidad West Indies, he had in his office, and I've never seen this before. He says, "Don't you criticize me." He said, "I'm a success. What are you?" That's hanging in his office. He is a success. You say, "Well, that's prideful." I don't care what you call it. I thought it was neat. Would I put it in mine? No, I don't have the nerve. But I thought it was good for him to put it in there. I said, "Why'd you put it in there?" I said, "I got people criticizing me that hadn't done nothing in their life. So I put it up." I said, "Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty good." Did you ever wonder where we, will you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, where we get that? Have you ever thought about that? Where do you get that? Believe it or not, the story goes back to medieval times when someone was being tried for a crime. Now, this is true. I've never heard this before, but this is true. When someone's being tried, the evidence seemed overwhelming. There was only one way out. He could stand up and say, "I plead the benefit of the clergy." Now, believe it or not, that's how this started. Now, when he pleaded the benefit of the clergy, everyone was just taken back. That's the same as admission of guilt. But it was the last hope, him or her. So a clergyman would come in and select a passage of Scripture, usually Psalm 51, the confession of David after all the sins he had committed. And they'd hand it to the accused. "Here, read this." It was kind of a forerunner of a lie detector test. The law said that if he could read it without stammering or stuttering, he would be set free because the evidence was totally against him. But if he stammered or stuttered one time, he was guilty. Usually, a guilty person could never read, ever, Isaiah. And it was almost 100% accurate. They were found guilty. They claimed the benefit of the clergy. I've never heard that before. Some of you probably have. True story. It's an interesting story, isn't it? Isn't it interesting? It's quite a story. Think about it. It's quite a story. Well, we should understand totally that we can know we're going to heaven before we die. You know, I never knew that. You know these hymns we sing tonight? I just love them. You know, I was raised the son of a Methodist preacher. I was in church all my life. You know, back in those days, every church had three services a week. Every church. The Methodists, Presbyterians, the Christian church, the Baptists, everybody. Now, a lot of the Baptists don't. We're an unusual church. You know, if you put everybody that's in here tonight, everybody that's in this building tonight, this would be a full house. Got Awana, we got Higher Ground, we got talk time going. We got people in almost every room of this building. We have our high school students doing their own thing going on, and that's great. Did you ever read about the cocoon of the emperor moth? And it was a flask-like shape, and it would have to squeeze itself with all its effort to get out of the cocoon. And it would work so hard, and then get out of the cocoon, and then it'd be a beautiful butterfly. They studied this thing for months upon months upon months. Sometimes people would cut the cocoon so it could get out easily. But if it got out easily, it never could fly, and it wouldn't live. You know, God puts us in struggles sometimes. Sometimes the struggles are so hard. Sometimes, some of you right now tonight, I bet you've gone into struggles that you don't even know how you're going to survive. I bet you there's not a person in this room that didn't have that sometime in their life. How do you survive it? Now, I'm going to do more of this on Sunday morning, but you know, you have to literally, you have to die to self. Now, you'll get more of this Sunday morning, okay? So just hold on. I don't have time to really get into it tonight. But you have to die to self. I've been in pain so much, and finally I've just said, God, I can't go on. You have to help me. And I have to die to self. And never once has God ever failed me. Now, if you don't understand what I'm saying, don't you miss Sunday morning. Don't you, please don't miss it. Die to self. And he'll help you, like that cocoon. And you know, babies struggling to be born, if they didn't, they wouldn't be as healthy. Fills their lungs. You know, they said that Emperor Mark, without going through that moth, going through all the things that it goes through. I shouldn't have said butterfly, moth. And if it didn't struggle to get through the cocoon, it wouldn't get anything in its wings and it couldn't fly. Some struggles in our life, God says, I'm not doing that to hurt you. I'm doing that for one reason, and that's to help you. I'm trying to help you. And that's what God wants you to do. Sunday morning, I had a man come in. We had a whole lot of families come from Victory and Grace. This man came. He said, Pastor, I had come all the way from Southside Chicago, a long way. He said, I don't know how I'm going to get home. He didn't ask me for any money, by the way. He said, but I had to come see you. And I'm watching him as we're singing, and he's singing with his whole heart. So as soon as service was over, I went and gave him a bills. And he said, thank you. I said, I'll be able to get home now. Such a touching thing. They had two blind men in the church. One sat over on this side, one was over on this side. And I was watching. And they're singing, like they're swaying. And both of them are exactly the same. And they didn't know about the other one. And they're smiling. And I'm thinking, man, they're feeling every motion of that music. It was such a blessing to see it. They were so excited. That's how we all should be, right? And you know, you heard Pastor Dave talk about his son, and he was excited. Don't you get excited? You know, sometimes I think when I first got saved, I was so excited, and I'm still excited, but we got to stay excited. How do you do it? You go back to your first love. What's our first love? That's the way we were when we were saved. You remember that? I'll never forget it. First night I slept, it's like I didn't touch the sheets. I hadn't learned not to witness, and I started witnessing to everybody. I hadn't learned by being around Christians, you're not supposed to be happy. So I was happy to everybody. I mean, I was just happy. People thought I was crazy. All I want to do is tell people how to go to heaven. The university, I had an office, actually, and I'd bring people in, set them down, and tell them how to go to heaven. They said, man, what are you doing? How'd you get this office? Well, I was using it, I guess, not for the reason I was told, but I was using it. I just couldn't help it. But, you know, we have to keep fighting to keep that, right? You know, we get so wrapped up and so concerned. And, you know, a child doesn't have that, do they? They're just, they say things. They're so pure. They just say things. Where'd that come from? Well, they just said it. So fun. When I gave all that to my grandson, I'm not, listen, he hadn't arrived, believe me. Please don't think I'm saying that, because I don't know. The minute you think your kids have arrived, you know that judge, Roy Moore, that was the Ten Commandment judge. He was with Pastor Matt. Now listen, I'm sharing this from my heart. He said, Pastor Matt, let me give you a warning about your two girls. You never trust them until they become adults. Ever trust them. Some of you parents, You let your kids go to a neighborhood and they see a bad thing one time. They see pornography one time and you've ruined them. I tell you, when I raised my kids, I was so protective. The only thing that I would not ever bend on was raising my kids. And a lot of you'd come say, can they come over? I said, no, they can't. Why? Because I don't want them to. I just didn't let it happen. You said, well, you were crazy. Well, you see the results. You can say whatever you want to say. I protected my children. Boy, I tell you, if I hadn't have had it, you see what it would have done to the ministry? You have to. You know what I'm saying? You can't not do that. It's impossible. You have to do what you're supposed to do. You have to do it. There's no other way around it. I hope it makes sense to you. I hope this service makes sense. Because I tell you, there's nothing like knowing that you're going to heaven. Now, what if someone's in here tonight and they don't know? Oh, let me tell you the other nice thing about Sunday morning. We had 11 adult hands raised for salvation. Man, I tell you, I was so excited, and I had to leave a little bit early because they do their offering at the end. I mean, at the end. I mean, nothing wrong with that, but I got out of the offering. No, I had to leave because we didn't want to get to Iowa too late. But, I mean, everything's over, and they have their offering. I said, well, why do y'all do that? They said, people are in a better giving mood. I said, man, I've been stupid all these years. Now, we're not changing. Believe me, I'm not. I promise. Well, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. And we change all the time, don't we? I mean, now I'm preaching down here. We have talk time going. You got it? I mean, we're always looking for change. We don't ever do the same thing the same way. By the way, Sunday night we're having communion. That beats Super Bowl any day. I was pretty tough at Pastor Matt's church. I said, if y'all miss a Super Bowl for Christ, don't expect your kids to turn out. Hey, record it. Then you don't have to watch those stupid million-dollar commercials that most of them are wicked. You record it, boom. But if they get 6 touchdowns the first 3 minutes, you erase it. You know what I'm saying? Well, anyway, I like sports. I really like sports. But I'll never let sports ever take the place of Christ, right? Of course, you can't. You can't take that chance. You can't do it. So, anyway, look over here at my right and your left. Ephesians 8:9, for by grace are you saved through faith, that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Are there going to be any boasters? Not going to be any. It's a gift. What do you have to do to get a gift? You just receive it. You just receive it. You know, sometimes you get sick. You know, I made a big mistake. My wife and I cleaned a patio, and I power washed it, and then I put this stuff on it. And the guy he said, don't you dare do it without a mask on. But I asked the guy where I bought it, and he said, if it's outside, it's no problem. Oh, man, I paid a price. I said, Lord, I'm coming home. I'm never doing that again. Man. But boy, I tell you, isn't it great to know you're going to go to heaven when you get real sick? My wife's biggest fear Sunday night is that she wouldn't die. She said she felt like dying. Now, I'm joking. She didn't really. But she felt like dying. I mean, you don't want to live when you get sick, do you, when you get that flu? Anyway, this billfold represents sin, this hand, you and me. God says, I love you, but I hate your sin. To go to heaven, you got to be sinless. There's nobody in this room sinless. I promise you that. Not one person is sinless. Christ was sinless. You know, I'm doing Luke at night, so I'm studying Christ's life and Romans in the morning. These things are such a blessing. And you see, Christ was perfect. But none of us ever had a perfect child. Right? None of us. But here, Christ, who never sinned, takes our sin, 2 Corinthians 5:21. He who knew no sin was made sin for us, that we could be made the righteousness of God in him. See, Christ takes all of our sin. How many does he? If he takes them all, how many do we have left? How many? None. If he did it, we don't have to do it, right? Isn't that good news? It's great news. Greatest news you'll ever hear. God looks upon you and me as righteous as he looks upon Christ. Isn't that exciting? Isn't that exciting?